Another transformational company of the 90s, likewise manned by prominent figures from the departing Bush administration, George H.W. Bush himself and Secretary of State James A. Baker III, was the Carlyle Group, partly funded by rich Saudi investors. Military and Pentagon contractors were conspicuous on the list of Carlyle subsidiaries. One was the Vinnell Corporation, close to the CIA, which held contracts to train the security and internal police forces of countries including Turkey and Saudi Arabia. Other contractors unrelated to Carlyle went even further, providing thinly disguised mercenaries and paramilitary forces for unofficial operations overseas. Despite the threats of 1973 to 1975, it took oil nearly two more decades to become a reason for direct U.S. military intervention overseas, as opposed to CIA-led overthrows or large arms sales. The occasion was Iraq's 1990 invasion of Kuwait and the 1991 U.S.-led war for its expulsion from there. Saddam Hussein had told U.S. officials beforehand that his invasion was based on oil-related provocations. First, Kuwait's alleged slant drilling of Iraqi oil fields just over the border, and second, the Kuwaiti efforts through OPEC to drive down oil prices to deny Iraq the revenues supposedly needed to rebuild after eight draining years of war with Iran. Once the United States decided to eject Iraq from Kuwait, however, Saddam's rationales became irrelevant. When President Bush mobilized American forces, he commented matter-of-factly that our jobs, our way of life, our own freedom, and the freedom of friendly countries around the world would all suffer if control of the world's great oil reserves fell into the hands of Saddam Hussein. Secretary of Defense Cheney was even more vociferous. Once he, Saddam, acquired Kuwait and deployed an army as large as the one he possesses, Cheney argued, the Iraqi leader was in a position to be able to dictate the future of worldwide energy policy, and that gave him a stranglehold on our economy. Compared with the pretenses of 2002 to 2003, these statements were relatively candid. It was not only in and around the Persian Gulf that oil dominated American foreign policy. Bush's decision to intervene in Somalia in late 1992, supposedly for humanitarian reasons, was later proved by the investigative journalism of the Los Angeles Times to have been substantially oil-driven. Four large U.S. oil firms, Chevron, Amoco, Conoco, and Phillips, had exclusive concessions covering two-thirds of Somalia that were put at risk when the nation's pro-Western government was overthrown. Although the U.S. government spoke of peacekeeping and company spokesmen denied motivations of oil rather than of humanitarian relief as absurd and nonsense, the newspaper noted that Bush himself in 1986 had dedicated a Texas-run oil facility in nearby Yemen, an occasion when he emphasized regional oil development. Equally to the point, Conoco had allowed its corporate compound in Mogadishu to be made into a de facto U.S. embassy a few days before the Marines landed in the capital. These circumstances, the Times concluded, led many to liken the Somalia operation to a miniature version of Operation Desert Storm. Oil-based foreign policy persisted under Bush's Democratic successor, Bill Clinton. Captivated by mid-90s assessments of the energy potential of the Caspian Sea region, Clinton in 1995 announced strategic partnerships with Uzbekistan and several other newly independent republics in former Soviet Central Asia. Several U.S. companies had already negotiated oil or gas deals with Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan. In a 1998 book, The Grand Chessboard, Zbigniew Brzezinski, a former Democratic White House national security advisor, touted the Caspian and Central Asia as a strategic pivot in much the same way Britain's Mackinder had before World War I. Brzezinski's strategic recommendations, to be sure, had a more specific oil and gas focus. Because the landlocked Caspian was inaccessible to oil and gas tankers, pipelines became an early petro-imperial focus. Along with Britain's Blair, Clinton became a patron of the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline. He also promoted a route from the Black Sea across the Balkans to Albania. Meanwhile, General Anthony Zinni, the U.S. CENTCOM, Middle Eastern commander, opened military conversations with the new republics. By the time Clinton left office in January 2001, he could point to other minor Kipling-esque innovations. The Silk Road Strategy Act of 1999 and the April 2000 launching of the Central Asian Border Security Initiative. But by 2002, oil companies drilling in the Caspian and finding little began to conclude that its energy potential had been overblown. In 1997 to 1998, observers had generally dismissed petroleum-related interpretations of Clinton's commitment of U.S. military forces to the Balkans. The principal allegation was that European and U.S. intervention was really about making southern portions of the former Yugoslavia safe for pipelines bringing Caspian oil from Bulgaria on the Black Sea to Albania on the Adriatic. In 2002, the Asia Times offered an even broader indictment. All countries or regions which happen to be an impediment to Pipelinistan routes towards the West have been subjected either to a direct interference or to all-out war. Chechnya, Georgia, Kurdistan, Yugoslavia, and Macedonia. Few in the West listened.